And it's 1:32. This is KYR 89.1. I'm Daniel Breen. We're breaking into our program and bringing you live coverage of Governor Asa Hutchinson's daily briefing on the coronavirus outbreak in Arkansas. At yesterday's briefing, we had an increase of 817 new cases for a total of 31,114. And now we go live to the governor speaking at the state capitol.
I am, as usual, joined by Dr. Nate Smith, of the Secretary of Health. And this is his last day that is here at a COVID daily update. I just had a text from someone and asked me to issue an executive order countermanding his employment at CDC and having him stay here, but I don't think my executive authority goes that far. But Dr. Smith has been a great partner for us, and wish him well as he goes on to the new venture in service of our country. And of course, we have Dr. Jose Romero, who will be the acting Secretary of Health, that will join us today for the report. And today we have Dr. Joe Thompson, who's a former Surgeon General in Arkansas, but also Executive Director of ACHI, Arkansas Center for Health Improvement. They've been an incredible support mechanism for our state, an enterprise that helps us in so many different ways in the areas of public health. I first want to say that I have good news, and I talked to former Senator Mark Pryor shortly before lunch, and he indicated that his father, former Senator, former Governor David Pryor, has been released from the hospital. And so that's a matter of great joy that we see that progress in his health condition, that he has been released. And I know that'll be good news for all Arkansans, and Mark did give me permission to share that information. I also have some other good news that's related to, as we have described, the second crisis that we've had in Arkansas, and that is the economic crisis. And the statistics, the information was released today on the state unemployment rate. And the state unemployment rate has declined again from 9.6% in May to 8% here in June, and this is significantly below the national average, which is at 11.1%. So the news that Arkansans are going back to work, that jobs are being created, there are some areas of concern there that we've had some people leave the workforce. That is a concern, but the 8% unemployment rate is good news for Arkansas. And so with that, let me go through the case data today. Yesterday we had 31,114 cases, and today we have an additional 648 new cases. That brings us to 31,762 in cumulative cases. So that's 648 cases. The top counties in new cases were Pulaski County with 68. We had Washington County with 44, Craighead County with 32, Pope County with 30, Benton County with 29, Garland County with 24, Sebastian with 22, and Sling County with 21, with the rest of them being less than 20. We've tested 5,861 over the last 24 hours. Hospitalizations, we've had a decline in hospitalizations of 6 down to 464. In terms of deaths, we've had an additional 12, and as Dr. Smith will point out, that's not within the last 24 hours. That's just some data that's had to be added in this period of time. So that brings us to 353 Arkansans that have died as a result of COVID-19. And then finally, I want to make one announcement today, and that is that with the support, with the leadership of ACHI, they have now made available city-level data for COVID cases. And this is something that many municipalities in Arkansas has asked for. It is something that they've worked on. They've accumulated the data. They've got the where this will be up on the website. And after Dr. Smith makes his discussion, I'll have Dr. Thompson come and talk about that in more detail. And I recognize now the extraordinary need for this, and it's fascinating just looking at some of the top counties in terms of percent of the population in a city that has positive cases cumulative since the beginning. And it's not always the Fayettevilles or Little Rocks of the world. It is the Higdons and Hinesville and Danville and Belleville and DeQueen that are some of the top cities in terms of percent of their population that have tested positive for COVID, which obviously indicates that we have to make sure that we're mindful, not just in the urban areas, but the rural areas as well, as to the potential of this spread. And I failed to go over our slides here, which is helpful. The number of new cases you can see is down at 600. That's not where we want it to be, but it is better than what it has been in a few days recently. The rolling average, I like the fact that we dropped off some of those high numbers that we've had in the past, and so we have a little bit of a downward trend there that we hope we can maintain. And then the number of currently hospitalized patients is down slightly. We've got, hopefully, as more people recover, that will go down some more. 7-day rolling average of positivity cases is also a downward trend. We hope to be able to increase our level of testing, and we hope that that will continue to be below 10%. And I've asked Dr. Romero to discuss this next week as to how we can increase our testing with some of the challenges we've had with our commercial labs. So we'll be looking at that. And then the final one, I believe, is that one. We have this is the testing facility, which continues to be instructive, as you can see. Even though we had over 5,861 tests, which is a lot of tests, you know, our commercial labs is still not quite as high as we would like it to be, and we hope that we can make some progress on that. With that, Dr. Smith, thank you.
And this is Health Secretary Dr. Nate Smith. You're listening to KYR 89.1.
Thank you, Governor. I'd like to give a few more details on the numbers and then also make a few additional comments. As the governor has indicated, we've had 648 new cases. 39 of those were in correctional facilities. 609 were in the community. That brings our total to 31,762. Of those, we have a total of 6,633 active cases. And of those active cases, 131 are in nursing homes, 1,013 are in correctional facilities, and 5,489 are active cases in the community. As the governor has indicated, we did have a net decrease in the number of hospitalized patients, so we're at 464. That's a decrease of 6. We also have a decrease in the number of patients on a ventilator. Currently, we have 97 patients on a ventilator, which is a decrease of 4 from yesterday. As the governor mentioned, we are reporting 12 additional deaths. 7 of those are from the last 3 days, and the other 5 are cases that were delayed in being reported to us, and they range from as early as July 24th up through, June 24th up to July 12th. We have since yesterday had 581 recover, and that brings our total recovered to 24,776. The governor has mentioned that we did have 5,861 tested yesterday, and we are behind on our target for the month. There have been challenges with reagents in the commercial labs, but we have some things that we are doing, and Dr. Romero will give more details as we go along. But just in broad strokes, we are increasing our capacity at the public health lab. We're hoping to bring on 2 additional high throughput instruments over the next month, which would basically double our capacity. at the public health lab, and also begin utilizing antigen tests, which are, that's not antibody, these are antigen tests. They are point of care tests that give results in a short period of time, and they are actually measuring components of the virus, proteins in the virus. They are different from the PCR tests, but they are actually directly measuring virus. So as those come on, we should be able to increase our testing and increase the number of people who can get their results in a very short period of time, even as the commercial labs continue to build their capacity in terms of getting reagents. I have, over the last few weeks, had a number of folks email me about some of these challenges with turnaround time for tests, and also challenges with delays in being contacted for those who are positive and in the contact tracing that goes along with that. These are all linked together. If there's a delay in getting a result back, there obviously is going to be a delay in contact tracing, and we are experiencing some challenges right now. We don't have the level of testing that we would like, and we don't yet have the level of contact tracing that we would like. But with the plans that we have in place, we will be tripling our contact tracing capacity over the course of the next month. And as I mentioned before, hoping to double our lab testing capacity in the public health lab. We're not where we want to be in terms of testing and contact tracing, but we are expanding our capacity. And with that, I'll turn it back over to the governor.
I come ahead, Dr. Thompson. Again, let me say how much we appreciate you working on this city level data, and you can explain it.
Thank you. This is Dr. Joe Thompson, Thank President and CEO of the Arkansas Center for Health Improvement.
And for the opportunity to work with Nate Smith over the course of the last many years. It's been an honor, and it's an honor to be here on his last day. Our Arkansas Center for Health Improvement has served as a surge capacity amplifier for the health department, largely in two ways, through communication efforts and also data analytics since the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic. On the communication side, we've done weekly phone calls with the leadership of the State Chamber of Commerce, with CEO forums across the state, with the Arkansas Municipal League. Through the latter, we've had really great calls with mayors and council members across the state. And through the Q&A that came forward was a need to be able to have those mayors be able to say to their constituents, COVID is in our town. When the reports come out at the county level, a small town mayor doesn't have the power to be able to say, we have it in our town. So with the health department's support, we use the analytic capabilities of our center to go through and actually look at the cumulative cases to date through, the date is through July 9th, and divided that we have the number of cases in each community. About 600 communities have had a case. We do not report on communities that have fewer than 10 cases, okay? So the communities that have fewer than 10 are not on the list. You'll be able to get to the list by going to our ACHI.net, website, and on the COVID page, first thing up now, I think, will be the sortable list for communities. As the governor mentioned, these are small communities that have the highest proportion of their population that's been infected. There are 100 communities, plus or minus, ahead of Little Rock that have the proportion of their population that's been affected. Little Rock is actually less than 1%. So this is, I think, valuable information for those local mayors, local elected officials, and others. Our municipal league calls, chamber calls continue. Governor, I will tell you the engagement is spreading as the message gets out and as more and more people, unfortunately, are affected. And we will look forward to updating these case numbers on a weekly basis and are working closely with the health department to harmonize the definition of active cases so that at some point in the future we could be able to have active cases per population level in each community. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Dr. Thompson. With that, we'll take any questions.
The White House Coronavirus Task Force has a report that lists Arkansas as being in the red zone for cases and recommends in the hotspot counties that we close bars and gyms and limit restaurant capacity even more and things like that. Just wondering what's the reason that to this point you haven't implemented those steps, and if also are there recommendations in the report that we are implementing or we have plans to implement?
Well, of course, I talked with Dr. Burks last week about what we're doing in Arkansas. Yesterday, I spoke with Admiral Girard in terms of our testing and our goals there. So absolutely, we're working with the White House Coronavirus Task Force and what we're doing and accomplishing here in Arkansas. In terms of some of the specifics, we have, for example, in reference to bars, you know, we increased our enforcement activities for restaurants and bars to make sure there was compliance with our public health guidelines. We enlisted our alcoholic beverage control officers to support the Department of Health in those guidelines. So that's an example of where we took the admonition and the objective and took it in a different direction that will accomplish the same thing. But will allow them to do business. If we have to put more restrictions, we will continue to look at that. I was trying to think whether there was any other point there, but we have looked at those and we're taking those a step at a time. Dr. Smith, did you have anything else there?
This is Health Secretary Dr. Nate Smith.
Very briefly, there were a dozen recommendations. They were pretty boilerplate, not Arkansas specific. We've already implemented the majority of those recommendations, but there are a few that we're looking at carefully, but they have to fit for Arkansas. And what we have right now, we did have that hot spot in the northwest part of the state. That's coming down. We did have rising cases in central Arkansas, and that's plateaued, maybe going down. So we really have not had large hot spots with lots of bars and gyms, for example. And so we will try and implement those recommendations in an Arkansas-specific fashion when we can, but not everything may exactly fit because they're designed really for all 50 states.
There are some county sheriffs who say that they are refusing to enforce the mask mandate. What would you say to them?
Well, actually, I expect to have a call with the sheriffs later today, coordinating with the Sheriff's Association to set up that call. And I'll, of course, listen to them. But we believe this is important from a public health standpoint. That's been adopted nationally. It is something that is necessary in Arkansas with the cases that we've had. And so we would like to see this utilization of our law enforcement partners for education. As the executive order provides, there's not any enforcement provision that allows any kind of imprisonment. It is a warning and that has to be given, and then secondly, there could be a citation for a fine. But all of these decisions in terms of enforcement are subject to local priorities, and you know that is the prerogative of the sheriff. It is the prerogative of the local police department to set their enforcement priorities, and so I defer to them on that. But it is an option that they can utilize to educate, to enforce, and to make sure that we all stay healthy in our communities. Leslie,
school question. Some of these school districts in places where there's a high rate of infection, why can't they make their own decisions based on their school board and their people, whether to go online rather than all online, rather than to have in-person education? I mean, why is there a one-size-fits-all for every?
Well, there's not a one-size-fits-all solution for every district. That's not the case. In fact, there's some state guidelines that are provided and assistance that's provided to the local school districts, and they make a lot of the local decisions at that level, as it should be. I hope to have next week we'll have Secretary Key here to delve into more of the education issues, but What we have said is that we want to have school to start. We've delayed it 2 weeks so everybody can listen more to their community. They can talk to their teachers. They can get their health plans in place. And so they have time for that. We have time to work on everyone fighting hard to get our cases down and to avoid the community spread. And let's start school. I think it is very important for our children in one of the safest environments in the schools. We want to make sure it's safe for everybody. But we recognize that there's got to be a plan for in-classroom instruction, and there has to be some options for online instructions. Within that, there is flexibility, but we want to work with them and make the right decisions for our children and our teachers.
Is there a threshold, though, in the numbers that would make you dial back on schools opening up, and especially, too, because we've seen in these congregate settings, this thing tends to blow up, and I would assume school is kind of looked at in the same way, with people just sort of on top of each other hours, part of the day. So I guess, is there sort of a magic number or just sort of a ballpark number that you'd look at to where maybe you would back off of reopening school?
You know, in this business of fighting COVID, one, you can't get cocky because where you see it going well one day, the next day it's not going well. So there's not any arrogance here. There's not any magical solution. It is just simply hard work every day and doing the right thing. But whenever you look at whether it is, our state workers having to go out there and meet with the public for filling out unemployment and making sure that those services are provided, or whether it's our state police that has to deal with motorists on the highways, or whether it is the private sector, whenever the workers are having to go out and work in essential industries to provide us the electricity that we have. In every instance, there's dealings with the public and there's risk associated with doing work. And so there's no one that would say that it's gonna be risk, there's not gonna be any risk associated with opening schools, but is there a low enough risk that we can start? And my judgment is that right now, let's go to school. That is the best thing to do. Obviously, if things change, we take another look at it. And we'll continue. There's been a great partnership between the Department of Health and Education to looking at this, and we'll continue to.
Have you talked to any legislators that have indicated they want to express their disapproval of the mask mandate? And have they actually explained how they would do that? Because I presume you're not going to call a special session to do that.
Well, I mean, I've heard from legislators that did not like the statewide mandate for masks. And that's what's beautiful about our country. We can, there's a lot of different viewpoints out there. I have to be in the position as governor to make a decision. And I made a decision. And I know that it'll be second guessed. I know that they are likely to have hearings that will discuss this, and they can call witnesses to it, and they can vet it out. I don't know what steps they will take, but there's a lot of support in the legislature for the executive order that was entered. There's some that do not like it, and that's just the nature of the different opinions that we have in our country, and it's reflected in the legislature.
Have you thought through if, I guess somebody mentioned there's a possibility they could meet without convening a special session and pass a resolution of disapproval? If you were presented with the resolution, you thought through what you'd do with that?
I haven't thought through with that, and so I don't have any answer for that. Yes.
What do you think the consequences will be for our state to have this testing struggle and then the delays with the contact tracing?
Well, our contact tracing has been steady. It's just that it has not been able to keep up with the level of cases. And that delta, that gap is going to be closed because we're bringing on hundreds of new contact tracers this week and on into next week. And so that's going to continue to accelerate. And so as long as we can keep our cases at a more manageable level, then our contact tracers will be able to get that job done. In terms of the testing, we're working on that every day, both in terms of our ability within the state to do testing. We've got some initiatives that we're working on, but also talking to the White House about the commercial labs and how that can be accelerated. So we're doing it on both both tracks and working through the problem.
I guess what changed with the city level data? Because yesterday it seemed like we were dealing with IT and HIPAA issues, and now today we announced, hey, we've got that available for cities. So I guess kind of what changed between yesterday and today?
Well, we learned a lot more between yesterday and today. ACHI has been working on this with the Department of Health. Obviously, the data is important for them. In terms of the HIPAA, it's my understanding that the concern was that we don't give information out that will lead anyone to one particular person and their identity. And so that's why the decision was made to not put out the data if there's fewer than 10 positive cases in one city. If there's more than 10, then there's a degree of anonymity there that will assure that HIPAA is not violated. Dr. Smith, Dr. Thompson, if you want to add anything to
this
that.
This is Health Secretary Dr.
Absolutely.
Nate Smith.
We have been partnering very well with ACHI, and basically they've lended their analytics support to be able to do those analyses so we can continue to prioritize our analytic capability on the things that we've been doing and the directions that we need to expand. This has really helped us a lot, but also, you know, that solution of not reporting those with fewer than 10 cases is a solution there. So we're very happy in this partnership we're able to overcome both of those obstacles and make this available.
Let's go remotely. Is there any question remotely?
Yeah, Governor, this is Andrew with AP. On the masks enforcement part of this, is there any concern, if you're deferring to local law enforcement on this, is there any concern that there might not be enough buy-in from local law enforcement to make enforcement effective on this? And is state police, are they going to be enforcing this as well as local law enforcement? Are they playing a role?
I see this as a local issue that it's the county sheriffs, but it's also probably just as significantly the city chiefs of police and the city police officers that have a role to play, and they will be acting based upon the direction of their mayor, the city council, and the local priorities. And so that's how we do things. You know, whether you have a law that prohibits recreational use of marijuana and transportation of drugs, I mean, these are items that are enforced at the local level, and they make decisions on priorities and how they go about doing it. Our guidelines are, and I also have really not any doubt, but that Arkansans are going to respond to this. They have already through the education process. You know, the step of making it a statewide mandate just addresses the small percent of people that have been hesitant or have been unaware of this, and hopefully that will increase based upon this statewide mandate that emphasizes the health benefits from doing it. Any other thing remotely?
Governor, yes, a question for Dr. Smith, please. Now, I'll start by just saying thank you to Dr. Smith for the educating answers over the last several weeks. I'm sure people join me in that. Dr. Smith, I had a listener call about the reporting of positive cases, and the question was this: if someone is reported as positive and then they go back and retest 2 to 3 weeks later and they are still positive, is that treated as a new case or is it linked to the original positive case?
No, if someone's retested and they test positive more than once, we only count that once. We have, as the data comes into our database, we deduplicate. That's why sometimes there is a delay between when those results are received and when they enter our database. So we want to make sure we deduplicate them, to the extent possible. Basically, we don't want someone in our database twice. Now, as time goes on, there may become evidence that someone could be infected more than once. So far, we've not seen that. And if someone tests positive a second time, it's usually because they're continuing to shed virus. And that shouldn't be counted as a case more than once. So the short answer is no. We deduplicate those so we don't have the same person counted as a positive more than once.
That's a great question, and it leads us in really to the weekend as well. We're still in vacation time. A lot of people are taking vacations, going to Florida, going to other places. And I think they need to ask themselves a number of questions when they come back. Did they go to a hot spot where there was a high level of community spread? Secondly, what were they doing there? If they were just isolated in a cabin with their family or a beach house, and didn't associate with anyone else, then they should be in good shape. But depending upon what they did, as they come back from one of those hot spots, they ought to consider whether they should be tested and whether they should talk to the Department of Health about testing or whether they should be quarantined. Dr. Smith, that's a really good question. And I want to also add, you can come up, but this weekend, I just want everybody to pay attention. It's hot out there, but we're going to be going to the lake. We're going to be doing different things outside. We're going to want to get out of the house. Just remember that we still have a lot of areas in fact, all over Arkansas in which we have community spread, and we need you to be careful, to wear your mask, to socially distance, and to make sure that we follow the guidelines this weekend.
And again, Health Secretary Dr. Nate Smith speaking.
Sorry, I agree 100% with what the governor said. We're at the point in the epidemic where it's less an issue where you go, more an issue what you do when you get there. And really, we should try and avoid large groups and continue to maintain physical distancing, wear masks in public, especially when that physical distancing cannot be maintained consistently. And that's true whether you stay here in Arkansas or whether you go visit someplace else. It's really what we're doing when we're there and not so much where we're going.
And I heard another question remotely.
Governor, one more question. Craig Cannon, 4029. And so the unemployment number is, good to go down to 8%. We were at the unemployment office this morning, and there's a very long line of frustrated folks having trouble with their claims still. They're having trouble, they're having to go in person to show an ID, they said. Is there any way to maybe prove that identity online? Just a lot of questions about unemployment and the process right now. It's very slow. And then one other quickie is that the eviction moratorium, on the federally related properties ends at the end of the month. You've asked landlords to have some sympathy, but is there anything else you can do possibly to help these folks?
In terms of the question on the landlords, we continue to monitor that. We have made sure that there's money in rental assistance programs and making sure that that's available. The first part of the question, again, Craig, was in relation to the unemployment lines. And let me just tell you that we've had a segment of our unemployment claims and our pandemic unemployment claims that have been marked as not having accurate information or potential fraud in there. And so those are the ones that we're having to work through, and it could be those that are having to show their correct identity or to correct the information that's in the system. And so we're trying to work through that. I know they're devoting a lot of resources to it. For some that are just caught up in an error in the application or in the system, you just have to be patient to get that. For others that there's some other problem there, they just got to sort through it, because we don't want to lose taxpayers' money because of we're not paying enough attention on the fraud side as well. So it's a balance there, and hopefully we can pick up on that short backlog of those that have questions raised on their applications. Final question.
I guess also too in regards of unemployment, did we see any certain industries seeing a better bounce back than others?
Well, we've seen the healthcare industry is one of them that bounced back because they had to lay off and then they brought those back on. We've also seen in the hospitality industry that as we opened up more and there's been people are getting out to our state parks, going to different events, our hospitality industry has picked up as well. But we've got a lot more work to do, even though that's a great deal of progress below the national average. There's still too many that are unemployed. We want to make sure that those job opportunities are available for them. Thank you all very much.
And that was Governor Asa Hutchinson speaking in his latest daily briefing on the coronavirus outbreak in Arkansas. You're listening to 89.1 KYR Little Rock, a listener-supported service of UA Little Rock in partnership with UAMS. Just a brief rundown of what we heard today. The state saw an additional 648 new coronavirus cases for a total of 31,762 Arkansans who have ever tested positive for the virus here in the state. A bit of a decrease from yesterday's daily uptick of 817 new cases. We also saw the number of Arkansans hospitalized with COVID-19 actually decrease for a total of 464. But we did see a large uptick in Arkansans who have died from COVID-19, an additional 12 deaths from that disease, bringing the total to 353. We heard Health Secretary Dr. Nate Smith say that that doesn't really reflect 12 Arkansans who have died in the past 24 hours. Seven of those, he said, were from the last 3 days, and the other five were just cases that were delayed in being reported to the health department. They occurred anywhere between June 24th to July 12th. And today's uptick in new cases, again, 648, brought the state's total number of active cases of COVID-19 to 6,633. That also includes 1,013 active COVID-19 cases within the state's correctional facilities. I believe that is the first time that there have been more than 1,000 active cases in the state's jails and prison system. We also heard that Pulaski County again had the highest increase of new cases today with 68 residents testing positive. Washington County up in northwest Arkansas had 44 new cases, Craighead County 32, and Pope County 30 new cases. The rest were under 30. And we heard a bit of good news at the outset of today's briefing. We had reported during one of the governor's briefings earlier this week that former U.S. Senator and Arkansas Governor David Pryor had been hospitalized with COVID-19. Both he and his wife Barbara had contracted that virus. But we heard today the governor saying that he had been in contact with his son, former Democratic U.S. Senator Mark Pryor, who told him that his father, David Pryor, has been released from the hospital and is recovering from COVID-19. Again, you've been listening to the governor's daily briefing on the coronavirus in Arkansas. This is 89.1 KYR. Tune in this afternoon to All Things Considered for a more in-depth rundown, and again, during weekend edition tomorrow morning. And as always, you can listen live online and catch up on all of our coverage of the COVID-19 pandemic and its effects in Arkansas at our website, kuar.org. Thanks for listening. This is KYR News.